Canada's next government will be a Liberal government. It is not yet clear at this hour whether it will be a minority or majority, because some of those close races we were talking about. This marks a fourth Liberal mandate, very rare in Canadian politics. But the Liberal Party, led by Mark Carney, has pulled it off, a stunning reversal, a Liberal comeback with a first-time politician as leader. You're looking live there at the Liberal Party headquarters right now.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. By now, you probably have heard that Canada has a new prime minister, Mark Carney. He's as far left as Justin Trudeau. It would be as though Donald Trump lost to Kamala Harris. It's the same thing. There is that much difference between the two candidates. And again, they don't vote on the candidates. They vote on the party. They elect delegates in the ridings. And then the total of that determines which party gets the majority. Then they are the ones who choose the Mark Carneys and the Pierre Poilievres. They choose the candidates. It's confusing for us. It's more like the British system. But we're going to talk about this today, the ins and outs of it, with two Canadians, a husband and wife. We talked to David Splett probably 6 weeks ago, and he and Brenda Jane are going to join us because they live in Vancouver. They're both very articulate, and they can tell us a lot about what happened in that election and what's happening in Canada and what might happen as a result of the election. Well, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. And you know what? As Mother's Day approaches, I wanted to highlight an organization that cares deeply for mothers. You probably know what's coming. Well, who is it? It's Preborn. Preborn's network of clinics exists exclusively to offer love, life, and support to pregnant mothers who are feeling scared and alone and are being pressured to make the ultimate choice that will not only sacrifice the life of their preborn baby, but take a piece of their own heart. When a distressed mom comes to Preborn, she's welcomed with open arms and offered a free ultrasound to hear and see the precious life inside her. And the majority of time, she will choose life. This Mother's Day, you can help bring life to both a mother in need and an at-risk baby. One ultrasound is only $28, but you know that. Do you know that five ultrasounds are $140? You see the endless possibilities of how much you can give. It just depends on what resources you have, but if you would like to help Preborn, if you haven't given before, Mother's Day is a good time to think about that. Some of you will look at Mother's Day with sorrow, because some of you have chosen to abort a baby. And I just can't imagine. It's got to be. Remember that God can forgive you of anything. God can heal your broken heart. But as you think about this, it'd be probably a good idea to help Preborn so that they can stop this from happening to other women who make bad choices when sometimes they're young. If you would like to help Preborn, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. Our home base is afr.net. That's AmericanFamilyRadio.net. But all other podcast platforms, Spotify, Apple, whatever you like, Amazon, whatever you listen through, we are there. You can find us on social media, all the platforms. You can follow me on X and my Twitter handle. Isn't that lovely? I remember when they used to start saying that. I thought it was so funny. I could hardly bring myself to saying it. And now I'm saying it. It's at Sandy Rios Tweet. That's at Sandy Rios Tweet. Well, today, everything is all Canada. And we've got some interesting things to tell you. We're going to talk about the truckers. The Canadian convoy, remember we talked about that a lot during COVID. And so we'll talk about that and all the other things on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
To the millions of people who voted for the Conservative Party, and put their hopes and dreams in our vision. Thank you. It will be an honor to continue to fight for you and to be a champion of your cause as we go forward. We denied the NDP and Liberals enough seats to form a coalition government, meaning... And we did all of this in a very difficult environment. So I would like to congratulate Prime Minister Carney on leading this minority government. Conservatives will work with the Prime Minister and all parties with the common goal of defending Canada's interests and getting a new trade deal that puts these tariffs behind us while protecting our sovereignty and the Canadian people.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. We've been talking about the Canadian election. We've talked about it several times because they are our friends right on the border. And believe me, we had a huge role in their election, even as Americans are occupied with other things and not even really knowing what's happening in Canada. I find that really ironic. But the issue is this Mark Carney, who is an heir apparent to Pierre Trudeau, just as liberal, no political experience, was running 25 points behind. And now it's not a candidate race. We've talked about this before. It's not like our presidential races where there are candidates and you vote for the candidates. You vote for the party, and whatever party gets the majority of members of that, their leader that they elect themselves becomes the prime minister of the country. So I know it's confusing, but that's the way it goes. So last night, the Liberals won enough for Mark Carney now to be the heir apparent. And he is the heir apparent of Trudeau. And we're going to talk about that. That was the voice of Pierre Poilievre. He's the conservative. We played clips of him many, many times because he's so clever. He's great with the press. Such a good guy. And what a terrible loss for Canada, what happened last night. So I've asked two new Canadian friends. One of them you have met on the air. We talked with him a few weeks ago about this race. And so David Splett joins us again this morning. I want to remind you that David, his experience is in international resources and industry, also finance and operational. He was a CEO of Calibra Mining, also various executive roles with companies like CFO Latin America in Mexico City, Goldcorp also. He worked with, he was president of finance at Mosaic, which is Minera Panama, and CFO of Antamina in Peru. You can see that he's been all over the place, and the next guest we're going to interview has been all over the place with him. But that's David's expertise. He also ran for election for a seat in his local, I'm not sure what you call it, but he'll tell us, the local body, governing body, about not even a year ago, I don't think. And so he's deeply involved and very concerned about Canadian politics. And he joins us again this morning. David, thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Sandy, and good morning to all the listeners. I'm very pleased to be in attendance again.
Yeah, oh, yes. Well, it's my pleasure to talk to you, David. And I want to interview guest number two because we need to do that before we go too much further. Her last name happens to be Splett also. It's Brenda Jane Splett. Brenda Jane is raised their three boys. They have three boys, and they have lived in... 15 cities in four different countries, 10 years living in Central and South America. And, of course, she was the person in charge of her kids, and she's done a great job. We met them quite by accident, really, in Vancouver, British Columbia, when we were there last. And we had such a wonderful, our faith in Christ and just concern about Canada, we shared that. And so they've become dear friends. So, Brenda Jane, thank you for joining us this morning, too.
Sandy, I really appreciate the invitation that you came to us with, that we could have a chance to share some of our thoughts.
Yeah, well,
and
I'm looking...
Go ahead. It's very nice that we stand and share that similar values of Christ.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so David, let's go back to you for, I'm confused, and the American listeners will be also. During Carney's speech, he said that, maybe it was the news report, that he doesn't have a majority. Maybe since that was made, he has it. In other words, he has to get the majority of seats or delegates, and they come from other parties as well. So where does it stand right now? Does he have the majority so that he can actually rule, or rule maybe is the wrong word, or does he have the minority?
Okay, so the Canadian system is based off of the British system, the Commonwealth parliamentary system. And in Canada, to form a majority, you need, of the 343 seats, you need 172. And as of this morning, the Liberals hold 168 seats, the Conservatives hold 144, and the Quebec Separatist Party holds 23, and then the far left Socialist Party called the NDP holds 7. So as it stands right now, there will not be a majority government. And what a majority affords the governing party is the ability to set law, to set policy, to drive a direction for the country. Without being a majority, they have to work with the other parties. And historically, up until this January, before Justin Trudeau resigned, he set up a supply agreement, which was an agreement that the New Democratic Party, the far-left Socialist Party, would vote along lines of whatever the Liberals wanted. So the Liberal Party became a very far-left Socialist Party under Justin Trudeau. So as it stands right now, Mark Carney has now inherited a very left-wing party. He's inferred that he's going to try and pull it back more towards the center, but he's going to have to work with the Conservative Party because of the fact that he has a minority. And we're hoping and praying that's what he actually does, because for those of us with more conservative values, it's deeply disappointing, these results over the course of the last 24 hours.
Yeah, Bruce and I were discussing that this morning, and we were just saying this would be as though President Trump had lost this last election and Kamala Harris were our president. This is what it means to you in Canada. I think that's not an exaggeration. Do you?
You're spot on. You know, when I think about the people who won. So last night we were at the post-election wrap-up with our local candidate, a gentleman named Stephen Curran for the North Vancouver Capilano. And it was a fairly somber occasion, given the fact that Stephen did not win against a gentleman named Jonathan Wilkinson. He's the Liberal incumbent in our riding. That's what they're called here in Canada. So our riding, and he is the Liberal Minister of Energy and Resources, and he's been a complete disaster for our resource industry, something I know a fair amount of bit about, rather. And unfortunately, our gentleman did not win, but it's been breathtaking, the change over the last, you know, as we talked last time, the last 2 months. It's just been a sea change just because of sentiment in the country. And they seem to think that Carney is going to be, you know, the new messiah that's going to change everything around. And you know, we'll see how the next 12 to 18 months roll out. But, you know, needless to say, you know, it would be, for me, it'd be worse than Kamala Harris winning. It'd be someone even more left-wing than her. And that's where our hearts are sitting right now.
Yeah. Well, there's so much to ask you. I think, you know, I heard Mark Carney, I heard a clip of him campaigning in Quebec. And he said something like this. If President Trump, I mean, if Poilievre wins, President Trump wants to, I don't know what Poilievre had to do with this. It was all about President Trump. President Trump wants to destroy French culture. He wants to do away with your language. That's what he's telling the people of Quebec. And evidently it worked very well. I mean, Quebec is very liberal anyway, isn't it, David? I mean, would they have voted for Poilievre?
It is. It's separatist and it's typically more liberal. But let's back up and let's look at structurally how most parties operate today and the platitudes that they apply to people. And every election, even in the United States, every single time, all the pundits say this is the most consequential election in the history of our country. This time, and like during COVID, the governing party got to say, this is an existential threat to our country. You have to trust us. And voters blindly accept this kind of, verbology, for lack of a better word, that comes from the politicians. And it's surprising. So they said, this is an existential threat to Canada. President Trump is an existential threat, and you need to trust us as a government. And they get votes because of this. And I know, when the last election in the United States, when President Trump won, both parties were saying literally the same thing, right? This is the most consequential election in the history of the United States. Well, the same thing was said in 2020 and 2016. The thing is, here in Canada, the Liberal Party tripped and fell on their face, and when they fell on their face, they fell into a topic that just happened to support them in 2021, which was COVID, and in 2025, which was the tariffs and President Trump's comments. And they hyped it up to being, this is the most important threat facing Canada in the history of our country. Forget World War II, forget all the other wars that we fought for sovereignty and for peace and for our people. This thing is the most important thing, and people went along with it, which is, it's hard to fathom.
Yeah, I want to give people an idea. When Bruce and I were there and met you guys with you a month ago, whatever it was, 5 weeks ago, one thing we noticed watching Canadian television, it was all the commercials for Carney were about Trump. They were about Trump. And of course, we'll talk about that in a second when we talk about Trump's role in this, because I think that is important. But so Carney, just to give an example of what you're talking about, this is what he said in his victory speech. This would be clip three. Let's listen.
Who's ready? Who's ready to stand up for Canada with me?
As I've been warning for months, America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen. We are once again at one of those hinge moments of history. Our old relationship with the United States, a relationship based on steadily increasing integration, is over. The system of open global trade, anchored by the United States, a system that Canada has relied on since the Second World War, a system that, while not perfect, has helped deliver prosperity for a country for decades, is over. These are tragedies, but it's also our new reality. We are over the shock of the American betrayal, but we should never forget the lessons.
But you're going to take us forward.
We have to look out for ourselves. And above all, we have to take care of each other.
Yeah.
And my message to every Canadian is this. No matter where you live, no matter what language you speak, no matter how you voted, I will always do my best to represent everyone who calls Canada home.
All right, that's Mark Carney, the now elected prime minister. He's not instated officially yet, I don't think, and after this election. But, okay, David, just there's so much to say in response to that, but I'd like to hear your response to what he just said.
Well, I wiped the tears away from my eyes. It was a moving speech, I'm sure, for many liberals. And I'll say this, is that it harks back to the very comments we were just bringing up earlier, which is, it's an existential threat. We're going to be taken over. And for your listeners, Sandy, we talked about it last time I was on your show, where we talked, if Canada was actually taken over by the U.S., right? 41, 42 million people in Canada today. And you look at the results, not of this election, but historically, you would typically have 30 million people in Canada who would eventually get pulled into the U.S. electoral system, which would consistently vote Democrat. So you would get 10 to 15 million people voting Republican and probably 25 to 30 million people who would vote Democrat. As a Republican, and I'm sure the Republicans are many steps ahead of me on this, as a Republican, you'd have to say it would have to be a massive resource win to take over Canada to accept the fact that the Republicans will never be in office for the next 50 to 100 years. So, you know, here at home, it plays really well to everyone. And what Mr. Trump has evoked is real nationalist sentiment. And as the issue of tariffs sort of blend away into the background, the reality that the Liberal government has destroyed Canada in the last decade. There was a 2015 article from the New York Times that roughly compared Canadian productivity versus American productivity. And basically, on a U.S. dollar basis, Canada and the U.S. workers were at par, you know, GDP per worker. We are now about, I believe it's about 40% below the U.S. over the last decade of the Liberal Party being in power, and we only attract half as much capital investment for businesses because of hostile business environments. So our existential threat is not President Trump. It is really poor federal governments who have no ability or no concept of removing red tape and bureaucracy. And just to amplify this fact is that under socialist governments in Canada over the last decade, it has resulted in 1 in 5 Canadians now work in the public sector. Think about that. 20% of all Canadians now work in the public sector or within government. And our problem is the existential threat is not external. Our existential threat is internal. Last point, where Carney says integration with the U.S. has come down or will be reduced, I want to let your viewers know my oldest son. We were in Berkeley 2 weeks ago and in Georgia Tech on the last Friday, and my son will be going to Georgia Tech to take his master's in materials science down there. Integration between Canadian families and U.S. families will largely not change, you know. You're still our friends. We still love the country. I think it is probably the greatest country on earth, full stop.
Well, that's very kind of you to say, David. There's nothing wrong with any of us loving our country. I think that's very healthy. That's loving. That's our family. Beyond the last name that we all share, and we have an immediate family, this is our national family. And it's just, we should love and care for our own people and prefer them above other countries. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I would say, you know, as an American, and I'm sure you know, I know that you pay so much attention. This is not a surprise to you. But Americans are not craving Canadian land or their water or to run their... That isn't even a conversation with anybody. No, people have respect for Canada. We just don't have the same kind of animosity that it seems that Canadians have for us. And we do sense a hostility that's been around for a long time, not by everyone, but just kind of a condescension or a dislike, but still like siblings that don't get along, I guess, would be something like that. But Brenda Jane, let me ask you, because you work in the public, in fact, we met you in a gym, that's how this all happened, and you're with people all the time there in Vancouver, which is one of the most liberal places in Canada. Did people talk about this election, and what did you... Can you help me understand why Canadians, before President Trump said anything he said, there's a bit of a resentment or a kind of a dislike or a disdain for Americans? Can you help us understand that? Or maybe you don't agree, but if you see it also.
You know what? I do agree that it has happened recently. I was unaware of it at first. I was born in 1969, and I grew up in an environment, and I enjoyed camping with my parents for a month out of every summer in Washington. Loved Americans. Always felt our countries were so close. I did not see this underground current that was building. And my three young sons, young adults, they're all in university, and all of them noticed this shift. And it's hard to believe where this all started for the young people. I don't know why there is this rift building in the young. But I know that there is also a desperate lack for critical thinking taught in public schools and financial literacy. If people understand their own finances, and personally here in Canada, people are going deeper and deeper into debt. Some of it, I suppose, is unavoidable. Well, at other times, I see people living a life where they don't deny their flesh and their current wants and needs as much as they used to in the 70s, where people, you know, they enjoy buying nice things. And I know life costs money, but at some point, they need to be taught in our public schools mandatory courses on financial literacy. Because if we truly understand the numbers, the taxes, our budgets, where our money's going, what we get back from it through government, we'll understand that the only thing that pays a government job wage is taxes and debt. And as our government is growing larger and larger, and the public sector, there's no growth in the public sector, almost nil. And government's exploding. People must understand we cannot support this forward.
Right.
And my three young sons see this because we talk a lot about it at the dinner table, financial literacy, and they've been in international schools abroad that teach critical thinking. And they see that we cannot sustain this.
Well,
and government buys votes this way by handing out money, and then the people feel indebted to government and they want those extra programs to continue. But the only way we can pay for that is by putting our future generations in debt.
Well, that's
and
exactly, you know, that's
things.
Exactly what's happening here. And you know what is actually happening all over the world? Europe is groaning under socialist leadership. They're groaning. They're economically, even Germany, it's shocking. You know, Germany has had it all together for all these years, and now their economy is shrinking and people are suffering. That really shocked me. I think that was the last country in Europe to go down that I know of. They're not down completely, but they are really suffering. It's socialist policies that are destroying Western civilization, among other things. But I think what you're describing, Brenda Jane, is exactly, you know, when you think about these other countries, like the countries in Europe, being led by the same mindset, and they all hate America because America seems to be the rebel. America is the country, at least thank God with the election of President Trump, we were all headed that way too. We're the beacon of freedom still, at least for this moment. Thank God for that. And that's why we're hated. We will not bow the knee. We won't go along with the program. And so I think you're describing what all of our kids are learning and how they feel. Many of our kids, you know, hate their own country because of that same teaching. But David, I want to go back to you because one interesting thing about Carney that I read, a week or two ago was he's, you know, railing against Trump in all of his campaign. This is how he won. He's railing against President Trump said some things he shouldn't have said. I would give you that. He should not have talked about, he pokes people. He was poking Pierre Trudeau because Pierre Trudeau is very arrogant. And so he was like putting him in his place. But he didn't realize the Canadian people would take that so personally. And so they did, and it turned on you, and now you've gotten this horrible candidate. But I did hear, ironically, that Mark Carney had agreed to meet President Trump the day after the election was over to sort of negotiate terms and to kind of learn to work to something. It infers working together. That just seems disingenuous to me.
I think this is Mark Carney's pipe dream. I don't think he has a meeting with President Trump. But before I touch on that, I want to go back to the comment you made, Sandy, about, you know, Canadians looking down under their nose to Americans. And just recall our conversation on socialism in Canada in the last 10 years of a highly socialist federal and provincial government. And this goes back to our last conversation from, you know, a month, 6 weeks ago, where I said socialists have one view of everybody in society. And this is pretty typical of a lot of socialists. There are the people who care about their community and care about their families and care about taking care of the environment and others. And those are the socialists. Then the socialists view the rest of society as rich elitists or bigots and racists or climate deniers, right? So now you have the U.S., which is the richest country on earth, and they don't, and you don't make any apologies for capitalism, because capitalism has demonstrated through the centuries it is the only economic model that truly works. So you've got all of our American cousins who are economically doing far better than us over the last 10 years, and far, far more investment being attracted there. So, you know, let's see this in the light of, you've got a lot of socialists up here who feel like they're the little brother and they're falling behind, and the socialists don't like that. And of course, socialists always know that they know best. Government knows best and they know best. So that's the one element I wanted just to complete the conversation on. Now, Mark Carney saying he's going to call up President Trump, or President Trump and he have agreed on this. I think what he's going to say is President Trump will say to Mark Carney, congratulations, good win, have a nice day, speak to you later. Right? Because in the end, let's look at this, in the practicality of the matter. The Canadian economy is about a $2 trillion per year enterprise. The U.S. economy is about a $22 trillion enterprise, albeit we're trading, you know, $600 billion to $1 trillion a year back and forth between the two economies. The U.S. economy does not hinge completely on the Canadian economy. Yes, auto parts and the rest are integrated. But the fact is Mark Carney's not going to be calling up Trump and saying, okay, let's talk, let's negotiate. That's not going to happen. They're going to maybe talk a little platitude at some point, and Trump will set the stage before Carney's even allowed to call him. Carney doesn't set the table on this matter.
Well, that'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see. And if he doesn't, I mean, if there's not an agreement, it's just sad. And I'm going to ask you in a second, what do you think this means? But I'm going to go back to Polib just for a second. When he was campaigning, we talked about Carney's campaign and how all he talked about was Trump. Polib ended up moderating. Well, let me just ask you, from a Canadian perspective, how would you have described his campaign prior to what Trump had to say?
You're asking me prior to the comments of President Trump, where
yes.
It would be, yeah. His campaign was very, very well received and very well taken by the Canadian public, and they were desperate. Everyone was desperate to get rid of Justin Trudeau, and so he was very well received. He's very well spoken, and economically, he understands all the issues. Then all of a sudden, when President Trump came into the picture, all the Liberals associated Pierre Poilievre's comments to be very aligned with President Trump. And they made the case that, you know, this is just the Canadian, they called them the Maple MAGA, right? The Maple Leaf MAGA. And that galvanized the Liberal base and the NDP base. So the Liberals, you know, the Liberals have 168 seats, largely because the left-wing socialists were eviscerated in this election, and they got to attribute some of President Trump's attributes to Pierre Poilievre. And by the way, for your listeners, Pierre Poilievre lost his seat last night. And to amplify the point of problems in our electoral process, his riding had 91 candidates. The ballot form was 3 feet long for his riding in Carleton.
Are you kidding me?
No. So, you know, the U.S. has its challenges with the electoral system. Canada has its problems.
So what do you think Poilievre will do? I mean, what do you see as a role? Could being outside of the government give him a greater role, a bigger voice? What do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think what'll end up happening is in the Canadian system, someone can give up their seat to Poilievre, meaning one of the Conservative candidates who won may end up going back and saying Polyev here, because Polyev grew the conservative base. Polyev is exceptionally good public speaker, and he is very well received amongst the ranks. Once this whole issue between President Trump's comments and our defensiveness right now sort of fall into the background, which will happen, families and markets continue to be integrated between Canada and the U.S., and Polyev will eventually rise back to prominence if Carney doesn't start pulling the Liberal Party drastically back to a centrist party. So I don't think Polyev leaves public life, but I have to believe he's going to be afforded a pile of opportunities in the private sector. You know, someone like with those kind of connections, he can make millions per year, you know, in terms of a corporate and government affairs gentleman, whether it's in Canada, U.S., or internationally.
Yeah, but I hope he, personally, I bet you feel this way too, I hope he stays in the game, because he is remarkable. He is remarkable. I fell in love with him when I started hearing him talk and how he handled the press. He's just an uncommon person. And we should say, as I understand it, the Polyev and the conservatives were ahead in the polls by like 20 or 25 points before President Trump made his statement. And we have this knee-jerk reaction with nationalism to support Mark Carney. So, Britta Jane, let me go back to you, because the next thing, just in Canada, housing is a huge problem. Younger people will never own homes. Let me just ask you, what are your greatest concerns on the election of Mark Carney? What things do you fear will either stay in place or will get worse?
Well, I fear the comment that Mark Carney made before he was elected, and that is he intends to keep the resources of this country in the ground. So I am hoping that he changes his mind and he helps the resource industry grow in this country, because ultimately, as the Bible says, we're to pray for our leaders in authority so that we can have peace. And I have prayed for Carney, and I'm sure many people are, is that he ultimately does what's best for Canada, not what's best for himself, not what's best for international things, but that he really looks out for Canada and grows this economy. And as far as helping other countries go, we've had other countries come to us and want to buy our natural gas. And the Liberal Party has said, no, we're leaving the resources in the ground. So these other countries end up burning coal. Yet the Liberal government claims they want to do what's best for the environment. If we sell them our natural gas, it's far less polluting than these other countries burning coal. And it would bring us jobs and investment. So, yeah, it's very concerning to me about what he stands for and who he says he is and the book that he wrote. There's a lot of information out there about who he is and what he's done in the past.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, because a lot of people don't know a lot about critical thinking, I don't think people have really looked this stuff up.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, you guys have one thing I love about Canada, and it's for both of you, too. The education, I don't think it's the case right now, you'd probably say, but the education has traditionally been so good up there. And you have such articulate citizens who are very well informed. I remember Canadians used to know more about American history than Americans did. Now, when I grew up, we had a great education system. I mean it. You know, the United States did. But Canada, when we started to fall back, Canada really was... you guys are just a tribute to your own education system. That's I'll leave it with that. And I admire that. I truly do. But on the issue of Mark Carney, David, I know something about it because I watched Jordan Peterson kind of lay out his past. But what strikes you? I know you just read his book. What things in his book are the red flags for you and how we might lead Canada?
Well, I think it's when you read his book, Values, he talks about all the things that are most important to people that can't be valued. So if you skip the whole, you know, two-thirds or three-quarters of the book, because it's largely just garbage or filth, right? It comes back to, well, it's hard to measure and value love and family and the environment and all these sorts of things. And again, you know, the way that this book expresses itself and becomes tangible in real life is him, while he was with the Bank of England, he set up the Net Zero Banking Alliance under the UN banner. And the Net Zero Banking Alliance was geared towards choking off capital to energy-intensive industries. And as we touched on, Sandy, you know, last time we talked, if it does not get harvested, pumped, or mined, it does not exist. And everyone needs to be acutely aware of those that point. And all of those industries, harvesting, which is farming, which is forestry, mining, whether it's zinc, lead, silver, gold, molybdenum, or all the metals that are needed in our society, or petroleum for locomotion. And it is foundational to all of our societies. And when Mark Carney says, you know, we need to save the environment and we need to choke off funding for all those industries that aren't going to be net zero by 2050, you know, there is a gentleman in Canada who is highly, highly respected throughout the world, including the U.S., and he's recognized as being one of the foremost thinkers on energy, and his name is Vaclav Smil. He's at the University of Manitoba. And Vaclav has said that it took 50 years for the car to replace the horse, and cars were enormously better than the horse and carriage system, yet it took 50 years. And in the last 25 years, our energy consumption has gone up, yet unit efficiency has improved. But in an absolute basis, our energy usage has gone up. And it will continue to go up. There is no net zero in our future through 2050. It's an impossibility. Yet Mark Carney was talking about choking off capital to these things. So either in his book, Values, he was just talking platitudes and trying to say the right things such that the book could be used to help him get elected in the future, or he was straight up lying, right? So what I see of Mark Carney is he is a very, very well-educated man. He is a very intelligent man. He is a fairly well-spoken gentleman also, and he has held governance roles in various corporations. He holds on to capitalism at the same time that he talks about socialism and environmentalism. And I don't know which one comes to the fore for the individual. And that's the big question for me that needs to be answered over the next 12 months. And I don't think it's a great response to your question, Sandy, but I think that's about the best I can come up with at this point, is only time will tell.
Yeah, well, before we say goodbye, there's one last thing, of course, that we hear about in Canada, and I've seen, because, you know, my son is there, is all the social issues, the housing prices, and all of that. Brenda Jane, do you have any reason to believe that that anything will change under Mark Carney in that, the housing prices? They're just, I don't even know what the future is going to be if people can't buy homes. But also just the moral issues and the arresting people in these mischief charges. Maybe you could just address the other two, and I'll ask David about the mischief charges.
Well, as far as the housing goes, I mean, there's a lot of taxes on everything, and those costs are passed on down to the people building the homes and ends up being passed to the consumer. I think we need a lot less governance. There's a lot of regulations that make building homes very difficult here right now. Things as simple as new subdivisions not even having natural gas pumped in anymore. So we have a lot of things that we've created of our own through government making housing very expensive. An $800,000 home, over $200,000 of that is taxes passed down, all types of taxes passed down to the builders, which ultimately have to be passed to the consumer. I think some of the answer to this is relaxing permitting but as well reducing taxes so housing prices go down. We have so much land here to build on. We are not at lack of land, but there is a lot of bureaucracy right now that is increasing the prices. And you're absolutely right, Sandy. Spot on about the fact that the youth don't have a lot of hope if they can never own their own home, because ultimately rent is lost money. So yes, correct.
Yeah. And then, of course, and I'm assuming under Carney, it's just going to be the same. It's not going to change. I don't think he promised anything differently. And the last thing, David, let me ask you, the Canadian truckers, I told you that was an event of great interest to me. And I actually interviewed Tamara Leach, which she was one of the organizers of that trucker convoy that went to Ottawa in protest for the COVID lockdowns. So they just got sentenced, and they were charged with mischief. It's pretty, pretty draconian. I just would love to know what your thoughts are about that, and if Canadians know about it and if they're even concerned about it.
Well, the one thing I love about the United States and the electoral system is the electorate is acutely aware of the need to elect or have the control on the election of Supreme Court justices and the judiciary. And in Canada, the Liberals and the Socialists over the last decade have put a lot of justices in place that are highly socialist. In fact, the head justice for the Supreme Court of Canada made a comment in a newspaper that Canada's Supreme Court is the most progressive in the world on social matters. So the fact that Tamara was charged with just misdemeanor relative to the original charges that were brought against her was the Crown saying, the government saying, this is the best we're ever going to get. We can't do any more than this. And then they find the right judge who will find for them. And I'm not saying the justice system is completely broken in Canada, but it has become a vehicle for socialist governments to enact legislation. And like the United States, common law on Canada builds upon previous judgments. So each judgment stands on the shoulders of previous judgments to form, you know, common law. And what they're trying to do is, you know, when you have protests, we want to be able to control it. Because, again, socialists know better than everyone else. They know government knows better than everyone else. And anyone who disagrees is either a rich elitist, a bigot, or a racist, or a climate denier, right? And so they got Tamara on what they thought they could get at very best, and they found a judge that would do that. And frankly speaking, it's a pretty minor outcome for, you know, versus where it started off.
Well, I'm grateful to hear that. I really am. So, last question. What's the next opportunity for Canada to have some different governance? How long is this going to last? How long are you stuck with this? Because, you know, in Britain, they're always calling for elections. That's what's convenient. They are. So does Canada do that? People don't like what's going on, and so they call for an election for the prime minister. Can that happen?
The history over the last 50 to 100 years in Canada is that a minority government will typically survive 12 to 18 months. Then there will be an issue such as a budget or something like that, which becomes a confidence vote in Parliament. And if a government loses a confidence vote, then immediately the country goes back into election. So historically, you know, something like this would go 12 to 18 months, but I'm suspecting with 168 seats, with 172 being a majority for the Liberals, and they've got 168, they'll probably last about 2 years because the NDP have been eviscerated. They have no financing. They've lost official party status, and I'm celebrating that. And the leader of the NDP came in third in his riding, and he's been removed and resigned. Thanks to God for that.
Yes.
And then both the Conservatives and the Liberals are going to need to restore their finances to fight the next election. And I would suspect you're probably talking 24 months to 36 months. So, you know, this too shall pass, but it's gonna take a little bit of time.
Yeah. Meanwhile, very disappointing. And so, hey, listen, I appreciate you guys joining us today. I know, listen, I in my lifetime of being in the business of politics and trying to talk about issues and persuade people, I have experienced a heart-wrenching loss almost every time. There have been very few victories. As a conservative Christian, it's an uphill battle all the time. But I've learned to just kind of like, okay, we know that our faith, you know, our hope is not in politics and rules and even our money. It's not there. It's in the Lord Jesus. And we know that as long as we are aligned with Him, He can help us through anything. I know that both of you know that well. But also, I do think that He, you know, God can deliver. So that's what we're going to pray for the people of Canada, for deliverance from really this kind of oppression, which is really what it is, I think. Brenda Jane Splett and David Splett, it's been a real privilege to talk to both of you again. And we wish you well. We'll talk to you soon up there in Canada.
Thanks, Sandy. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you. All right, my pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, Mother's Day is a time of joy. It is for me. It was always bittersweet for me because my first child, daughter, was severely disabled. So it was always bittersweet. And for some of you, it may be bittersweet as well because perhaps you've aborted a baby. Or, you know, you could be a dad or a mom and say that. And remember Mother's Day as the day you could have had another child, or a child for that matter, and that you actually made that decision. And this might bring up some bad memories. Now, I always want to hasten to remind you that there's nothing God can't forgive. And if you still have real strong feelings, I think it's some healthy guilt is good. But if you still have some really healthy feelings of condemnation and you've prayed about it, you know that God can forgive. A lot of that accusation is from Satan himself, that long, bony, pointed finger that accuses you. He is the accuser. So I'm not recommending that. But as we approach this day, there are things, you know, first of all, understand that if you have asked for forgiveness and you meant it and you had remorse, you have been forgiven. But the rest of you who are enjoying this Mother's Day and you haven't had that situation in your life by God's grace, it's a good time to remember, you know, how precious babies are. Oh my goodness, what I wouldn't give for another baby in my life, another grandchild. You know, I don't think I'll be having another baby. But it's just one of the greatest joys of life to have a little baby in your life. And so I want to say happy Mother's Day to all of you fellow mothers out there, and I encourage the rest of you. And that brings me to preborn, because they celebrate life every day by stopping women from making the terrible decision to take the life of their baby. I'm all about that. All about trying to prevent that, and so are they. And they do it by showing ultrasounds to women who are, you know, thinking about terminating their pregnancy. And it's very effective, because when they see the baby, they just realize, this is a really little person, and it's my baby, and I just can't do this. And so if you'd like to help in honor of this Mother's Day week, and maybe it's time to do something really special, and that's give. to preborn. It's $28 for one ultrasound, and whatever multiple of that that you can afford would be so greatly appreciated. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. It was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Let me tell everybody a story about Big Red here. I bought this truck brand new in 2003, November 26th to be exact, and I've got 3.4 million kilometers on this truck as of today. I have raised my children in this truck. I have trucked all over North America with this bad boy. It is a piece of me. It even has the little footmarks from where Jonathan as a toddler, right, used to kick the dash with his little winter boots in the car seat. This guy's here, but up here on the door, you've got Buddy. Buddy took his last breath in this seat back 14 years ago.
And his collar still hangs on the visor as of today.
Hopefully we don't have to do that with you, do we? Probably. Someday, but we'll cross that bridge when we get there. It'll be called the Rainbow Bridge. So everybody knows now, obviously, that the Crown Prosecutor in Ottawa has filed for forfeiture order on Big Red. They want to seize it as proceeds of crime. And they want to destroy it or auction it off, one of the two, we're not sure yet. And now we're going to have to battle that out in court. So I would like to just, my main point behind this video is just to come on here and express my thankfulness for everybody out there that's been sharing the videos and trying to get word out of what they're actually doing. Very thankful for that. Public awareness is something that we really, really need right now on our side. Our next court date is May 21st, 22nd, and 23rd in Ottawa. We will be there in that. Attending, and we'll fight these battles out in the courts. So everybody needs to keep a level head. We have been in this movement for peace right from day one, and we want to keep it that way. So no anger, and we'll do what we got to do. We'll just keep standing, we'll keep fighting, and that's basically, who would have thought 3 years later we'd be still sitting here, hey? While a lot of murderers and rapists and drug dealers and Palestinian protesters continue to wreak havoc all across Canada, and we're still running our way through the courts. So, but we're still standing, and we got a ton of people standing behind us, and we're very thankful for that. So appreciate all the support.
All right. Well, so, the United States has our J6ers. We certainly talked about that. We're not done talking about it, actually. I hope to do a show on kind of a catch up with them on what's going on. But Canada has their trucker convoy. Do you remember that? In 2022, they call it the Freedom Convoy, and it was just a spontaneous, it was planned somewhat, but it became huge, and it would be sub-zero temperatures in Canada. And these convoys went from the West Coast to Ottawa, which is nearly to the East Coast, and they gathered from all parts of Canada, would join this, and it was just amazing as they travel across the country. They're going to their capital, Ottawa, to try to meet with Trudeau and his cabinet and talk about the lockdowns, because the lockdowns were having such terrible effects on their businesses. But not only that, it was their children in school. It was the whole nine yards that we saw the same thing here, only Canada was locked down pretty much more as a country than we were. We had some pockets of freedom. And so the truckers they were on the front lines. And the voice that you just heard was Chris Barber. Chris and Tamara Leach, who I actually interviewed Tamara during this time. They were the kind of organizers of this. They went to Ottawa. They were very polite when the government was, of course, very hostile to them and kept giving them tickets, and they would blow their horns. But they were very respectful. They were very respectful. It was pretty amazing, really, how much restraint they did show. Well, Chris's truck is a huge red truck. It's absolutely beautiful. You heard him describe it. For 24 years, he's raised his kids in that truck. It's a huge, huge truck. And it became kind of the symbol of this movement, the big red truck, they called it. Well, now Chris and Tamara have been found guilty of, you know, mischief. They call it mischief. And one of the penalties, we don't know how long they are going to be serving. That is going to happen probably in May. But we know that they want to take Chris's truck. And that's his livelihood. That's how he feeds his family. And also, they will probably make it possible, if he gets this conviction, for him to travel into the States to do his business, even if he could find another truck. So this is what's happening in Canada, and you can believe, maybe I'll be surprised, but I doubt that Mark Carney will change anything on that regard, will intercede, will try to do anything, because the truckers were so, you know, just like the J6ers here, many, many Canadians believe the claptrap of their government and look down on these guys. And these are the heroes of Canada. They're like the modern-day Mounties, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of their courage and what they did. But their lives were nearly destroyed. In fact, maybe in some cases were. I don't know everyone, but they did take their money, close their banking accounts so they couldn't pay their mortgage, feed their families. It was horrific what happened to them. And that's the update on the Canadian truckers. Well, I hope you enjoyed this. I know it's not our country, but these things, they're right on our border. And whatever happens to them, even if you're not aware of it, it does affect us. If we have a government that won't cooperate with us or that is at war with us, that's a problem because we share a border. Think about illegal immigration, drugs coming over. Think about the products that we share. There's just a lot of things. It's like breaking up a family if they are really going to consider that we are now their enemy. That's just ridiculous, by the way. And yet the Canadians, many of them evidently believe it because they put Mark Carney in the office last night. So, and by the way, last night was April the 28th. I'm talking to you on April the 29th. So just to set the record straight, you might listen to it on a different day. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's discussion. I certainly did. And learned something. I certainly did. And I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because speaking of money, which we've talked a lot about today, the economy, they show you how to put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.